Reading FC ensured survival in the Championship with two games to spare on Saturday, finally allowing a chance for fans to breathe a sigh of relief. Albeit after a 3-0 defeat at Hull, the Royals are staying up, and now you're going to believe us. Welcome to the Tilehurst End Podcast, episode 298. We are very much near the end of the season and our little milestone, which we'll be doing for the season review in a couple of weeks. I'm your host, Mark Mayo, and joining me this week to talk, well, I guess we'll talk a bit about the game, but there's other stuff that we'll be talking about as well, is Ollie Allen. How's it going, mate?
Yeah, very well, thank you. There was a point probably earlier in the season where I wasn't sure we'd ever be doing this podcast, the Reading and Staying Up podcast. So, yeah, very pleased to be here.
Yeah, for sure. It did. It always seems to me like the sort of thing, I think probably my lowest optimism levels probably hit about 55% chance of us staying up. But yeah, we'll get into the what's and the whys later on in the show. We'll have a little look back at that whole game as well, and look forward to the final home game of the season against West Brom in a little bit. But before we do that, let's get into it. Let's talk about what happened on the weekend. A big thank you to our sponsor, ZTZ Films, and our Patreon subscribers as we go towards it. Then let's do the recap and talk about Hull 3, Reading 0.
Come rain or shine, it's time to relive the latest match action with the recap.
This podcast is sponsored by ZCZ Films, Reading's oldest ultras.
Right then, Ollie, let's get some analysis out of the way, because it's, I think most of the fans who probably went probably don't have too much of a memory of this game already. I suppose that is kind of the question, which we will get on into in a bit. But just for the game itself, I mean, in defence of Reading in this game, the first goal was an individual error by a player who, Tom Delibashiru, I don't think many of us particularly rate and isn't going to be at the club next season. The second one came from a free kick that wasn't a foul. We did create some chances, and I'd probably say that Michael Morrison was probably caught out for all three goals, but this probably wasn't really a 3-0 game. It really did flatter Hull. And Reading, I suppose, just not taking their chances, can't really complain too much, though.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It wasn't really a 3-0 game on balance, really. It was a fairly even match for the most part. I think we actually had more shots than Hull and more shots on target. So, yeah, I think it was just simply a case of Hull taking their chances. I think all three goals, really, Reading just sort of switched off. They were very easy goals for Hull to score. You say the first one, it's a Delibashiru error, and Morrison's caught out of position. The second one, you know, yeah, it probably isn't a free kick, but, you know, again, the defending is woeful, really, when the ball is played into the box, a bit of pinball, and the attacker's able to poke it home. And then the third one, again, it's just far too easy for them to break through the defence, a little ball over the top. And, you know, you can't give someone like Keane Lewis Potter, who's, you know, one of the most exciting young players in the Championship, that sort of space and that sort of time like Michael Morrison did. So it was just a case of Reading not being switched on. And to a certain extent, you can almost understand that. You know, they were so on it over the Easter weekend. You know, it was a brilliant Easter weekend, you know, the best weekend of the season, really, picking up 4 points against Sheffield United and Swansea. And there was almost a feeling after that Swansea game, particularly with the other results, that Reading were pretty much safe. And then coupled with Barnsley getting relegated on the Friday night, you know, it was down to a straight shootout between Peterborough and Reading. So I'm sure, you know, that there was certainly a feeling amongst the fan base that Reading were pretty much safe anyway. And, you know, I imagine the feeling was the same amongst the players, as much as they, you know, they might want to deny it. I think it's very hard when you know, you're in that position where, you know, safety is pretty much secured. You're always going to switch off a little bit. And look, we know this Reading team, you know, have these sort of defensive performances in them. You know, that's why we're in the position we're in this season, is that, you know, that they've conceded far, far too many goals. And, you know, that's something that's not changed under Paul Ince, really. You know, we conceded 4 away at Blackpool, 4 away at Forest. We conceded 3 here now at Hull. So, you know, this side are defensively vulnerable, and, you know, the goals were far too easy for Hull to score. So, but yeah, I suppose ultimately the overarching point from all of that is that nobody really cares, to be honest. You know, Paul Ince certainly didn't seem to care really too much in the performance, in his post-match comments. And to be honest, you can't really blame him. And, you know, no one's really going to be looking back at this game thinking it was such a terrible defeat for Reading, when, you know, ultimately it was the game that after it, Reading have secured Championship survival, which, you know, as I say, no one thought you know, a couple of months ago was going to be possible. So, yeah, it's one of these games. It's a bit like the Cardiff game, the final game of the season a few years ago, where it was probably the dullest 0-0 draw you'll ever see in your life. But ultimately, no one cares because Cardiff achieved their objective of get promoted and Reading achieved theirs of staying up. So, yeah, just one of those games that no one's going to remember, but no one really cares because, you know, the overarching point is that Reading is taking the championship.
Yeah, and your point on Reading switching off, I mean, it doesn't take much of an invitation for this team to switch off, does it? It really isn't a difficult feat to pull off. And I suppose the thing for me, I probably was a bit more disappointed about this result than most other. I mean, I honestly don't know what the fans really feel about it. I suppose it's a difficult one to guarantee just because Paul Ince doesn't feel bothered about it. I guess the fans who went up and saw 3-0 defeat probably did. In reality, but I suppose this is the thing, is that it felt to me like relegation was sorted with the Swansea game, and therefore I remember speaking last week about the shackles being thrown off and stuff, and it felt more of a logical conclusion or logical pattern to me that this team was going to go and actually play quite well at Hull, because they were off the back of a couple of really good results and stuff, and they were thinking that, you know, they were going to be potentially having a good end to the season just to keep the good mood going and everything. And obviously, you know, a couple of things change about this game and probably the result changes quite drastically. But looking forwards, do you think this result is going to have, does it change your mind at all on sort of what you think about the Paul Ince situation? Does it make you think actually those two results against Sheffield United and Swansea were a bit outliers? Those were highs, they were amazing, but that was the exception rather than the rule, that this sort of performance we've seen against Hull is actually the real sort of Paul Ince performances we get under Reading? Or is this a sort of result that we would have to say the same about the next 2 weeks in that case, that just doesn't matter and shouldn't be taken into account when we look to what we do with Paul Ince at the end of the season?
It's a really hard one, isn't it? I think it's probably a bit of both. I think, you know, that you do have to factor into a certain extent that, you know, that the result or, you know, slash performance comes off the back of these two results that the Reading gave everything, really. They left nothing out on the field against Sheffield United and Swansea, you know, two really good results. And there was always, you know, always going to be a come down to a certain extent, particularly, to say, you know, with relegation pretty much secured. And particularly, I think, you know, with Barnsley losing on the Friday as well, you know, it was, you know, pretty much done after that, really, you know, because people were never going to go to Nottingham Forest and get a result. So it is tricky. I can accept the performance to a certain degree. And as I say, it wasn't a 3-0 game. So, that, you know, it's not as if Reading played terribly. There were defensive lapses. And I say that's something that's not changed under Paul Ince. And, you know, that's something that I've always had concerns about, is that Reading are still shipping a really worrying amount of goals since Paul Ince has come in. We've conceded 23 goals since Paul Ince was appointed 2 months ago, which is more than anybody else in the Championship, apart from Peterborough, who also conceded 23 goals. So that's not changed under Paul Ince, and that's always going to be a concern. I think you have to look at the next 2 weeks, really. I don't think you can write them off. I think we have to see some sort of performance from the team. From a personal point of view, and I saw Michael Morrison mention it as well after the game, that I'd like us to, you know, finish within 6 points of the next highest team, whether that's Birmingham or Hull or whatever, just to say that without our points deduction, without Dowie's points deduction, is that we would have still stayed up. You know, we're not, you know, not staying up based just because Derby got 21 points taken away. I'd like us to finish in, you know, above the bottom three in the true table, if you like. And, you know, that's going to require some performances over the next two games against two, you know, decent enough sides. West Brom is obviously the more winnable game. You know, Luton may well be still fighting for a place in the playoffs on the final day. So that's not going to be an easy game. So it is a really tricky one. And, you know, I think we saw, what we saw over the Easter weekend was, you know, the epitome of everything good that Paul Ince has brought to Reading. And that is, you know, the pride and the fighting spirit and the unity amongst the group, is that, you know, ultimately he has got this team fighting all together again. you know, fighting for each other, you know, really pushing right to the end, you know, two late goals, not giving up. And it was the best of what Paulins has brought to the football club. But, you know, if the whole game was a sign of, you know, what life under Paulins is like, not in a relegation battle, then yeah, it's certainly a worry. And those defensive lapses, you know, are cause for concern. You know, we can rage on about the Paulins debate. There's certainly positives to take, and you know, there's certainly an argument to be made that he does deserve a shot next season. Equally, that there is obviously a clear argument that, you know, he's done his job. He's not fit long term for a long term project. And you know, it's not clear cut. And I can understand the views on both sides. As I said, I'd like to see what happens over the next couple of weeks before making a full judgment. You know, if Ince himself is really right in his next two games off, then that worries me slightly that, you know, he's not looking. I think it's tricky as well, because I think deep down he knows the situation. It seems to me, just from what I can gauge from his post-match comments, is that he knows really that the job is his if he wants it. I'm getting that impression. You know, he keeps on saying, we'll see after the Luton game, you know, the decisions to be made. And he said something as if it's, you know, it's down to me. He said something like that. So it certainly seems as if the job is there if he wants it. And if he does want it, then use these two games to build towards next season. Don't write them off, because it is an opportunity for each player to play with some freedom, to try a few things out, to get a head start almost, if you like, on next season. I know a lot of these players might not be here, but, you know, try out some sort of tactical tweak, give a chance to a couple of youngsters who might get a chance next season. You know, don't write them off completely. So it is really tricky. You know, and I'm sure sort of the Paulins approval rating will sort of fluctuate week by week, really, and it has throughout his tenure, really. You know, after every win, it's, yeah, he deserves a chance, and after every defeat, it's, you know, we should bid him off at the end of the season. So it is really tricky, you know, and it's same under Kapanović, really, that the Reading can be very, very good one week and they can be very, very poor the next week, and that's not changed under Paulins. So it is hard, and I'm still not sold either way, I have to be honest.
Well, that's the thing that I'm kind of wary of myself, is kind of flip-flopping and doing a show after we win and saying, oh my God, what an amazing manager, we have to keep him forever. And then after this sort of result being, oh no, it turns out he's awful. Actually, I don't think a huge amount has changed over the sort of period from, you know, the first couple games up to now. I don't think the team has kind of performed quite consistently, if that makes sense, relying on a couple of great moments to pull out results, and then kind of flopping at certain moments as well. As we mentioned, the Forest game as well was a big defeat. And I think I don't think that my opinion has really changed this week. I think I said after the Sheffield United and Swansea games, I still said I'm still not particularly keen on him staying. The idea that he would be able to persuade Laurent, Yeardom and loads of other players to sign contracts, if he can do that, brilliant, I'll keep him. If not, then I think we have to give it over to someone else who has perhaps more of a long-term view for the club. And I know what you mean about what he's been saying. He said something about next season after the whole game. And I was like, well, hang on a second, you haven't really got a contract, and most of the players haven't got a contract. So next season, thinking towards that is a little bit getting ahead of ourselves. And yeah, we'll have to see how the next two games go. It probably won't. I don't expect it will change my opinion. I feel like I've kind of made my mind up on it. I do look back to going back to, what was it, 09-10, when McDermott was in charge for the after Rodgers, and the season we'd beaten relegation, the season was kind of done, and we had an excellent end to the season, and that really carried on through the momentum season to season. Does genuinely carry on through for a lot of teams, and probably not this one given the status of it, but that was a good end to the season, even though there wasn't anything to fight for. And that's in those the last three games, I think that's what we should be looking for.
I go back to Gomez as well. A couple of years ago, I can draw direct comparisons to that, really, for me. Whereas it, you know, an example where it goes the other way, you know, whereas there's a lot of similarities in the fact that Gomez has come in, much like Paulins has done, obviously slightly earlier in the campaign. Gomez came in, but gave the team a short-term boost, you know, united the club again, brought team spirit, got a couple of results, you know, with late goals against Ipswich, against Wigan. And then really when it comes to the summer where, you know, there are restrictions in place, and, you know, that's not a bit around the bush. It's not going to be an easy summer in the transfer market again. You know, Reading aren't going to be able to spend any money. You know, Portland isn't going to have free reign to create his own squad, which is the same issues that Gomez faced. Obviously, Gomez then had that, you know, massive late splurge in the window, you know, bringing in João, Puskás, you know, whatever. Portland won't get that. And then obviously for Gomez, he couldn't carry on sort of that feel-good factor into the new season, couldn't build a project. And that's almost what I worry might happen with Ince, is that he's brought in such a feel-good spirit, and he's been able to galvanise the group for a couple of games, bring some unity around. But, you know, when it comes to building for that long-term, and history tells us, and Paul Ince's CV tells us that, you know, when he starts planning for long-term, and when he starts trying to put some kind of project together, it doesn't really work, and that is my worry, is that he's done a fantastic job, and, you know, we can't pretend he's not done a fantastic job in getting Reading to safety, because, as I say, a few months ago it looked as if Reading were going down without a fight, and he's come in and brought that fight. But I think back to that Gomez season, you know, what it is, two seasons where there was such a switch then in the mood. You know, we had a Portugal day to celebrate Jose Gomez. At the end of the season, he kept us up, and, you know, 5 months later, half the fan base is calling for his head. And I can see that easily happening with Paul Ince if he stays on.
No, 100%. And Jose Gomez, we did trust him to get rid of all of the wingers, for example, and kind of build around a playing style, which we then threw away 3 months later. And that's, I just think with Paul Ince, there is that danger that we get to October and he's brought in a group of Paul Ince players, and then we go and, you know, change manager again and just recycle through. And perhaps that is doing Paul Ince a bit of a disservice, and he can't be the one to stay there for a couple of years. Maybe he can. And, you know, the form he's shown in the last few weeks probably would be, I mean, I don't think it would be the sort of form the club would want, but it's sufficient to keep the club up, I guess. So, yeah, I mean, I just think for the club, we just need to see if they are capable. I think we've said a lot over this last few weeks. If there is a grand plan, if there is a real, genuine thought as to what we want the club to be, or what the club want the club to be for the next 3-4 years, and how they want to get it there. And obviously they want promotion stuff. They want to get through the financial mess we're in, come out the other side, whether that's next season or the season after, and then build for promotion again. We'll find out whether they have that sentiment for next season, because I think if they put Paul Ince in charge, then they will be saying that they don't plan for promotion anytime soon, which I suppose some people would say is fair enough. So let's hear from Paul Ince now, and then we'll go and hear from you guys in the mailbag.
Listen, I'm not going to dwell and talk about games and X, Y, and Z. All I'm saying, we had a common goal, you know, to stay in this league. I don't care how you stay in this league. Ideally, it would have been nice to get a result here, but, you know, going to Sheffield United to get the result, going to Bournemouth getting a draw, Blackburn, we've put the pressure on the bottom three, all right? And there's been games where you could probably say the bottom three were thinking, oh, they'll probably lose at Sheffield United, they'll probably lose at Blackburn, and we haven't. You know, and I feel like our work has put us in this position where we can afford to lose a game. We can't win every game. These lads are putting such a shift in for me, all right? And there's got to be a kind of understanding. We've had some tough games Monday, Friday, against Saturday. We've got half a squad. We've got five players out, six players out, all right? And the fact that the lads in there are disappointed shows how far they've come. And I've said to them, what have you got disappointed about? I said, you've achieved a goal. You know, when I came out, it looked like you were going down. But credit to you all of you. You've dug in, you performed, you played well. And today, we've played well again today. We've had five or six, seven great chances. We're a good team.
For all the latest Reading news, analysis and opinion, visit the website at thetilehurstend.com.
Right then, let's look ahead to the summer. A little preface towards this. Is on the Tilehurst End Twitter, as we quite often like to do as we get towards this time of year. Today we have put out a graphic showing the players that will and will not be at the club next season, kind of greying out the players who are out of contract and look to not be staying, or obviously we don't know the situation with a lot of those players, and kind of bolding the players who are going to stay. And what have we got? I don't think we've got 10 players who are guaranteed to be staying next season. As it stands, three of those are goalkeepers, four defenders, Dan Moore, Liam Moore, remember him, McIntyre and Abrafa, Tete Kansenga would be the only two central midfielders we got, with Ejaria behind João, Puskás and Mate, the three strikers. I mean, João Mate having contracts is a bit of a boost, but I mean, it feels like a bit of a weird one when they're celebrating the only two players of value in the transfer market who do have a contract left for next season. And even that's only 1 year, so probably won't, if we do decide to sell or need to sell, wouldn't be getting a great fee. So with that in mind, Richard has asked, what does a good summer look like given financial constraints and the number of contracts that are ending? Now, Ollie, this is, I suppose it's the million-dollar question, is what a good summer looks like. But I suppose breaking it down into, you know, the manager, the players, the club in general, which one of those three is kind of the most important thing to get right first? Is it that we need an overhaul of people at the top of the club? Director of football is what a lot of people have mentioned on social media recently. Or is it that we need to get a manager in first and then we don't, you know, the rest all sort itself out? Or actually, you know, whether it's Paul Ince or whoever, if we can sign a decent squad of players and have a bit of a refresh, that's going to be inevitable. The rest kind of takes care of itself then, maybe.
Yeah, I think it's a tricky one to answer, because I think ultimately, you know, the answer is getting players in, getting those players who are out of contract. Obviously, you know, we're not going to be able to keep all of them, but keeping at least some of them in the squad next season and then building around that, you know, with, you know, smart signings. But ultimately, that's only going to happen if a manager's in place, you know, whether that is Paul Ince or whether that is somebody else. I think the priority has to be, you know, confirming who's going to be manager next season, because ultimately existing players are not are going to be far less likely to sign new contracts if there's uncertainty about the manager. You know, we, you know, hear reportedly that, you know, Josh Lawrence says that he's more likely to stay if Paul Ince is the manager than you know, and so the, you know, whether that is Paul Ince or somebody else, I think players are going to be more likely to sign if they know who's in charge. Because, you know, if they sign a contract without knowing who the manager is, that manager, you know, they might not be in that manager's plans. You know, they'll get into the season not really playing, and they'll think they've made a mistake, and, you know, then you get all the problems coming up from that. So I think the priority has to be confirming who the manager is. You know, ideally you want that done probably by the end of May at the very latest. You know, contracts run until the end of June, so then you have a month to try and sort those. You know, the season ends on May the 7th, I think. So that's pretty much 3 weeks to get the managerial situation sorted, which, you know, is enough time for most football clubs. Whether it's enough time for Reading and this board is probably unlikely, but that's got to be the priority first and foremost. And then looking at getting players signed. And, you know, it is worrying, really, that, you know, that it's seven outfield players. I think from that graphic, obviously a lot of those players with contracts are, you know, academy players or young players who haven't really made much of an impact in the first team so far. So, you know, yeah, it's good that the likes of Yaku Mata and Lucas Zhao are tied down to contracts. But, you know, really, you know, at the moment, we're heading into next season with, you know, someone like Liam Moore, who is, you know, obviously got a contract, but will almost certainly be leaving a football club. You know, Scott Dann, you know, obviously will be here, but, you know, he's 34, 35. He's not someone, you know, you're going to build around. You know, Jari has blown hot and cold this season. George Puskas might well depart as well. So really, you know, the starting 11 is, well, and certainly the subs bench is almost non-existent at the moment. So I think a good summer has to be just bulking that squad up. And, you know, to be fair, it was a fairly similar situation, you know, in last summer even. You know, obviously we didn't bring any people in until, you know, mid-August because of the embargo, and they actually did quite well in the end of sort of getting bodies through the door on you know, free agents or loan deals. And I actually, you know, in terms of not being able to spend much money, they actually did quite well last summer in terms of getting quality through the door.
That's what makes a good summer for me, is because it wasn't until mid-August that they got those players in. A good summer for me this year is, I mean, it's going to have to be as many as five or six early free agent deals, getting them confirmed late June, early July, and getting these players in and just building a bit of momentum. Because, as you say, mid-August is no time to be scrabbling around the market, particularly this summer.
Yeah, no, and that's why we started so slow at the beginning of this season, because, you know, at the start of the season, we were having players, you know, we were bulking the squad out with, you know, academy players who ultimately weren't ready for first team football. When players did come in, we were bringing players in who hadn't had pre-seasons, you know, the likes of Scott Dann, who didn't play for 4 weeks because he wasn't fit. Junior Hoyle hadn't had a pre-season when he came in. So, yeah, absolutely, you know, we need to get bodies through the door quickly. You know, there's going to be players out of contract, you know, around the Championship, maybe even in, you know, some players in League One out of contract, you know, that the Reading should be looking at. You know, there is value to be had. You know, that, you know, we've seen over the last couple of years, you know, the likes of Josh Laurent, Michael Morrison, you know, both free agents, both really canny signings, and both, you know, played really important parts for Reading over the last few years. So there is value to be had. You know, whether we can explore the loan market a little bit, they've done that to, you know, pretty well this year, bringing in, you know, Drinkwater and Abarrahman and Deli Bashiru as well. So there is value to be had. You know, and you know, almost these, you know, restrictions placed on the club by the EFL, you know, having to get the wage bill down, you know, not being able to spend, you know, too much money, or, you know, spending within our means, essentially, you know, that has to be a good thing, because it's going to have to make them recruit smartly. You know, it's going to have to make, you know, them, you know, we can't splash, you know, $7.5 million on George Puskas or $6 million on Lucas Zhao. You know, we're going to have to be smart with recruitment. Whether I trust the board and, you know, the recruitment staff to do that, you know, is probably a different matter. But yeah, we have to get bodies through the door pretty quickly, because then, you know, we can, you know, as I said with the manager thing, it's all about planning. You know, we started the season so poorly, as I say, because the planning was so poor, and because players didn't come until mid-August. So if we can get, you know, bodies through the door, that stems from the manager being nailed down first and foremost, whether that is Paul Ince or somebody else. And then, you know, letting him dictate, you know, the you know, recruitment strategy to get players through the door.
Yeah, I do think that one of the things probably as Reading fans we don't really appreciate is that actually there's a lot of Championship players who are going to be out of contract this year. I mean, this is kind of a wider point, but I do think that probably pandemic is what I'd say is the most important reason for this, but players are more likely to run out of contracts now than they have been in previous years. You look at players like Mbappe, Messi and stuff like that. Maybe that wouldn't happen pre-pandemic. But if you have a look through the Championship players that are out of contracts at the end of this season, it really feels like a lot. So maybe that means, and League One, I can only assume, is the same. And therefore, that does present opportunities for Reading to both keep players, who, given it's going to be such a crowded market, and also to go and find other players. Kev O'Brien saying, or asking, who are the five core players you would want to build the team around? Assuming Swift will be gone, my picks would be Nyland, Yeardom, Holmes, Laurent and Zhao. Now, I think that whether you keep Nyland or not is actually a really good question. We saw a hole, and we saw it against Stoke as well. He has his foibles in goal, not perfect goalkeeper, but he's been the best goalkeeper we've had this season. I would say, obviously, Luke Southwood, Conyer Boyce-Clark and Jokerland racing behind him from the academy. My five players, looking at the moment, I think Holmes, I would say so as well. Yeardom, definitely right back. Certainly a player I would like to keep. Lauren, I just don't think he's going to stay, sadly. So I would say Rinomota as a kind of central midfield linchpin. He can fit, I think, into a variety of different systems with different managers. Then kind of going forward, yeah, I think ultimately Zhao has to be an absolutely integral part of this team going forward. And then it's difficult, isn't it, to pick one player out after that. There's a lot of, you know, Aziz, Halilovic, these sort of players who are good Championship players, but they don't strike me as core players, Ollie. So I'd probably say someone like McIntyre. Not necessarily because I think Holmes and McIntyre are brilliant quality and maybe they won't be ready to be a central defensive partnership next season, but they're both quite versatile. They're both the sort of players that you would probably want in the trenches with you, both young and mouldable by, you know, a good manager and everything like that. So I'd probably say those as my five. Who would you pick out from that group?
Yeah, I do think Yakimete is worth a mention. Just purely on his goal with that. You know, he's had a really tricky season with injuries, and, you know, struggled a bit last year with injuries too, and that ultimately is probably the risk, and, you know, probably the one thing that maybe doesn't mean his name is mentioned. You know, but there's no doubt that when he's fit and firing, he's one of the most important players in this squad. You know, he offers something that nobody else really does in terms of sort of the, you know, the speed and the power that he provides to Reading attack. to Reading's attack. And as I say, the goal return, you know, when he was fit and firing, you know, he was, you know, 15, 20 goals a season, Yaku Mata. And if he is able to play across 46 games, I definitely back him to get at least 15 goals for Reading. So, but as I say, you know, it's tricky with his injury history and how he struggled this season. So, yeah, I think for me, the three definites are probably Yeardom, Lauren and Zhao. And I appreciate what you're saying about Josh Lauren, that it seems unlikely for him to stay. But for me, he's got to be the probably behind Year. I'd say Yeardom is probably the number one priority out of contract players to tie down, and then you head to Lauren. You know, those two almost come as a pair almost. But you know, if we're, you know, taking that out of the equation, my three definites have got to be Zhao, Yeardom and Lauren. Yeah, and then the other names you mentioned, I'd, you know, probably two from probably certainly Andy Rinnemother. I think again it's similar to Lauren, is that I think those two almost come as a pair, really, is that, you know, we've seen this season that Lauren's not quite at his best without Andy Rinnemother, and Rinnemother's not quite at his best without Josh Lauren. So he's another important one. So probably, yeah, Yeardom, Rinnemother, Zhao, Yeardom. And then, yeah, probably, I think one of Holmes and McIntyre, if we're saying that the Mato's too much of an injury risk. So I think Holmes and McIntyre almost match this to a certain degree. You know, it actually wouldn't surprise me to see Tom McIntyre if say Rinnemother or Lauren were to leave in the summer. It wouldn't surprise me entirely to see McIntyre, you know, become more of a defensive midfielder type player. You know, he certainly isn't a left back. I think that's been made clear this season. He's not terrible at centre back, but there are players ahead of him. You know, if Michael Morrison stays, for example, and you know, Tom Holmes stay, you know, those two are probably ahead of McIntyre in terms of the centre-back decking order. So it wouldn't, you know, entirely surprise me if McIntyre became more of a, you know, defensive midfield player, which might make him sort of a player to build around. But, yeah, if you were to push me for five, I'd go, yeah, Yeardom, Lauren, Zhao, Rinnemother and Holmes, I think.
Yeah, it's one of my incredibly controversial opinions that McIntyre's a better CDM than he is a centre-back. And I also think Liam Moore's a better CDM than a better centre-back. And Tom Holmes is a better right-back than he is a centre-back. If I'm right on that, then it kind of explains why our club can't stop conceding goals this season, because none of the centre-backs are really centre-backs, apart from Michael Morrison, who I think will probably be leaving at the end of the season. So, yeah, it's interesting that none of us, no mentions for Obi Ejaria, the player who has the joint longest contract at the club, or George Buskas. But, yeah, there we go. Do send in your questions to the Tyler Stend Twitter and Facebook. I'm always got a call out for that before the shows. And there's also the tylerstend@gmail.com. I'm going to whip you through some news bites now, and then we'll come back for big match preview.
Keep up to date with all things Reading FC. Follow the Tylehurst End on Facebook and Twitter.
Sadly, a 2-1 defeat for Reading FC women this week. A late goal for West Ham to make it 2-0. Reading did go and make it 2-1, but they sit eighth in the WSL now. They can still grab fifth with a couple of good results to end the season. They've got Leicester and Man City left. So definitely a win is in that couple of games for Reading to see out what has been, you know, we'll have more of a chat about it later on, but what has been a tough but certainly at times rewarding season for Reading in the WSL. The under-23s are playing Fulham as we record this, so there's not much point in me talking too much about that, but after that they've got two games left to avoid finishing bottom of the PL2 Division 2. That's the objective for the under-23s this year, who, let's face it, are basically the under-18s team. The under-18s team, I don't know what they're made up of, probably the under-14s team. They've had a 3-0 defeat to Crystal Palace last time out. They've now got a pair of games against Southampton. They got three games left this season. The next two are both against Southampton in the Premier League South. Right then, Reading FC men's team, they got West Brom at home on Saturday. Let's talk about them now in big match preview.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Oz!
Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZCZ Films, showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.
So for the final time, we head to the Select Car Leasing Stadium Saturday, April 30th, for a 3 p.m. kickoff against West Brom. Now, Ollie, I don't know how far back your memory stretches to the last time that I can remember Reading playing West Brom as the last home game of the season. I particularly remember this, seeing a bloke dressed in a lobster suit heading into the away end. I think there was a Viking in there as well. So expect to see some fancy dress from the West Brom fans on the weekend, presuming they still run that tradition. I've obviously not checked with them. But probably not a team that are going to have much to cheer about. When we went to the Hawthorns earlier in the season, really felt like they were pushing through into a promotion party. And yet, they are absolutely lodged in mid-table. I think they are now officially out of the playoff race, although they are 13th, so that's pretty obvious anyway. So we can expect a potentially interesting game. But yeah, just to catch up on that, can you remember what happened last time we played a West Brom team, last home game of the season?
Was that under Gomez, or was it... And that we played them right towards the end of Gomez's season. It was 0-0. I think we drew with Birmingham 0-0 in the actual last home game of the season.
I'm going way back, further than Gomez, I'm afraid.
But further back beyond that, I can't tell, you know.
I mean, there'll be listeners of this who will probably berate me if I'm wrong, but I seem to remember it was a 1-0 Reading win against the West Brom team that I think had already been promoted. And I'm going to pluck a year out. It's probably like 04 or something, with a Steve Sidwell winner quite late on, I seem to remember. So do send in the tweets if I'm wrong on that. But I think that was the last time we had them, and hence why I can remember the fancy dress. And this time...
If it was 04, then I was 5 years old, which will make some people feel, you know, very old. So I apologise for not being able to remember that.
Yeah, I wasn't too much older myself, to be fair. But very different circumstances this time around. I mean, they're, as I say, absolutely lodged in mid-table, completely miserable end to the season. Their away record in particular is worse than ours. They've got a worse away record than Reading have this year. They've scored 18 goals on the road out of 22, 1-5, drawn 5, lost 12. So you can see why they've ended up where they are. And, I mean, it is the return of Andy Carroll, Ollie. So obviously the fans will be flocking out to see him back at the Select Car Leasing Stadium. And I guess really, even though we did lose to Hull and everything, it's the last home game of the season. We've just got to go out and relatively optimistic for a good performance.
Yeah, I mean, there's no reason why we shouldn't be putting in performance and trying to get a win. It's definitely the easier of the last two games. As I say, you know, Luton could well be still fighting for their playoff place. Come the final day, I think it'll probably be secured. But you know, they might, you know, they'll obviously want to carry some momentum going into the playoffs. If not, but so yeah, this game has got to be, you know, you always want to, you know, win your final home game of the season to sort of see the fans off into the summer. And you know West Brom have got, you know, nothing to play for really. You know, the results have been incredibly inconsistent over the last few weeks, and they've won one of their last five or six really. It's been pretty poor, one of the last four, two of the last six. So you know, and obviously Steve Bruce as manager has not, you know, really done much to inspire anybody at West Brom this season, you know, the players or the fans. I do wonder whether Ron Gourlay will be back to take his seat in the executive box, or whether he's going to, you know, cautiously steer clear of the Select Car Leasing Stadium in the risk of bumping into any fans. But yeah, it's, you know, there's no real star quality in that West Brom side. Maybe Andy Carroll apart, who will almost certainly score against us. I'm sure he'll get a good reception from supporters who, you know, we all wanted him to stay really in January. And, you know, by all accounts, the offer was made, but, you know, it was simply that a better offer came from elsewhere. But, you know, looking around that West Brom squad, you know, it's easy to forget that, you know, they were a Premier League side last season, and for, you know, the first half of this season, really up until sort of, you know, January, February time, they were, you know, right in the mix for the playoffs, and then they've just dropped off horribly. Obviously sacked Valerian Ismail, and Steve Bruce hasn't been able to do much either. But, you know, there's not really too much quality. You know, Carlin Grant up front was in red hot form at the start of the season. Again, it has dropped off, you know, much like the team. You know, Jake Livermore is always good for a yellow or red card, so he'll almost certainly get booked, I imagine. So, but yeah, there's plenty to play for. And as I say, we shouldn't be writing off these last two games. You know, you can write off the Hull game to a certain extent as a slight you know, not hangover, but sort of, you know, a relief game almost, if you like, having put so much into those Easter games and having seen Barnsley go down on the Friday night. You can excuse the whole game to a certain extent, but you know, you want to end the campaign strongly. And as I say, ultimately, you do want to get enough points to say that in a true championship table without Derby's deduction, without our deduction, that we would finish above the bottom three. You know, that's, you know, just from a pride point of view, I just think it'd be nice to say that we don't, without the deductions, if we had finished in that bottom three, it leaves a bit of a, you know, sour taste in the mouth, really. So if we can, you know, get a win in this game, that'll hopefully go towards that. So yeah, I'm optimistic, or you know, keen for us to put in a performance.
Well, for sure, and we'll talk about the prediction league in a second. But I will just add on any the Reading fans who will remember that May 1st, 2004 was the game that I mentioned earlier, which amazing. I don't know how I forgot. It was Ginger Wig Day when we paid tribute to Steve Sidwell and Dave Kitson, and obviously the former popped up with the winning goal. So it's a shame that, I guess, it's not really a year where we can have a day to finish off. I remember Portugal Day was a really nice idea, actually, to finish off the season for Jose Gomez, even if he didn't last too long afterwards. But yeah, I can't think of what we'd have this year for similar.
I'm not sure what a Paul Lynch Day would involve, really, to be honest. Whether you know, you get all the Man United or, you know, the 1996 England shirts coming out. I don't know, but
yeah, I think everyone just talks in incredibly kind of pub-like terms after the game. It's kind of Paul Ince's trademark, isn't it? Which I do like, to be fair. I'm not having a go for that. But let's talk predictions then. Only myself said a defeat against Hull. I know I did say that we're going to win in the podcast last week, but I changed my mind the day before the game and said we're going to lose 2-1. So I got a point for that. So as it stands, Ollie, you're top joint with Westy at the moment, 29 points. Adam's on 27. I've got fourth place myself, 23. Sim's on 20, Ben's 18. And then Handbags on 17 points. So I am going to go for a 1-0 win this time out, because if West Brom are that bad away from home at scoring, I think we will generally get a goal in us at home, won't we? So I'm going to go 1-0. What are you saying for this one, Ollie?
There's certainly no taking the foot off the gas for me if I'm in a title race for this prediction league title. I probably would have gone 1-0, but just to be different, I'll go 2-0 Reading, I think.
Clean sheets. Well, I think that sounds like a perfect end to the season in front of the home fans. And I suppose in a way we are kind of playing the perfect team, is that this West Brom team has been on a downward spiral for a little while now. And yeah, hopefully we can pick up something on Saturday, and then we're heading towards the final game of the season. After that, Luton away, only about 1,000 fans. Season ticket holders can get tickets to that. So good luck to those heading down, and hopefully we'll have a positive end to the season to talk about for our episode 300 coming up in just a couple of weeks. Ollie, as always, a pleasure to have you on this week.
Thank you very much. Yeah, as I said, I wasn't expecting to be this upbeat a few months ago. So yeah, thank you very much.
Yeah, it's actually, occasionally it's nice to take a step back and say we have done something that a lot of fans very justifiably really didn't think we were going to do this season. And it's very pleasing to say that Reading are staying up. It's credit to the players and the manager and the club, kind of with a hint of not so much credit, because we didn't really need to or want to be in this position anyway. But alas, we do know that when we turn up in the summer, we'll be thinking about a championship season. And isn't that just so much better than the worry and the fear and everything that would have been coming had the worst case scenario fallen upon us? So we'll be back after the West Brom game. Hopefully we can finish this season on a high and start having reasons to look forward to next season with some cautious optimism, as is our trademark here on the Tarless Den. Thank you for listening. Come on, you arse.
You smile. you smile. Funny how the crowds always be betrayed, even when it seems as high.